Good morning and welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we talk about A Course in Miracles. And if you're listening live today, this is September 21st, 2018. And on today's show, we will be discussing, we're going to go back to those what I call instructional essays that are in the second part of the workbook for students. And specifically today, we're going to talk about the one that is called What is the Body? From the workbook, and it's between lessons 260 and 261. So if you want to pull out those workbooks and do that, then you can just have it all ready as we take care of some housekeeping. And the person discussing this with me today is Bruce Rawls. And I'm really excited about this. I mean, I love these instructional essays, and I always love what Bruce has to say. He's such an interesting guy. In fact, before we came on the air, he's talking about passive solar. And so my mind is already going in another direction of, oh, that would be pretty cool. Or, you know, thinking about some of that kind of stuff, I love that. So I'm so glad that Bruce is here today. And also, I just want to shout out, we have Christy Brower producing the show today. So I was in the chat room a little early because I had tuned into 1-2 Radio before the show. And I thought, I'll just listen to whatever's playing on 1-2 Radio. And it was kind of funny because it was actually an encore of last week's show of Ken Wapnick talking literally about what is the body, which is what Bruce and I are going to talk about today. So I thought, what synchronicity? I mean, my timing was perfect, just tuning it at the right time. But then I went into the chat room and I said, hey, guys, if you're early, you know, Scott, our producer, is playing an encore. And then I look up and I go, but that's not Scott's picture up there. So anyway, it's Christy that's with us today. So Christy, welcome and thank you so much for being here today. And for those of you who are saying, you know, what is she talking about, chat room, et cetera, where's this picture? I am over on Facebook because we have a private group that we use during our shows. So if you want to join me over there, and there's a few other people, Greg is there and Quelly is there. So if you want to come on over and join us, you can ask questions or you can make comments during the show. You get there by going to the radio website, which is 12radio.com. And when you go there on the left side, that's where you're going to see the navigation tools. Hit on chat, and that's going to take you right back over to Facebook where you can ask to join the group, and Christy will let you in. So that's the housekeeping for today. So I want to get Bruce on the air. And many of you know Bruce. He's been with me many times. He is an avid, what I call, Course in Miracles, you know, student. He's also a writer, a web designer, and he's involved in all kinds of things. In fact, he's been very intricately involved in redesigning the websites that are, you know, associated with A Course in Miracles. So, you know, he's in the know and he makes this a very big part of his life. So, Bruce, welcome and thanks for being here today.
I had on mute. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
My apologies. I had on mute. Anyway, thank you.
No, that's okay. I just thought, okay, I know he was here before.
Sometimes when I'm shuffling around, I'll put the mute on. So anyway, but yes, thank you for, again, having me on your show. It's always a pleasure to converse with you and our favorite topic, which is A Course in Miracles. So.
Yes, absolutely. And this one right now is, I think, I don't know why, but I'm really getting into these instructional essays, maybe because this is the time of year that we, you know, see them in the workbook, mm-hmm. but also just other things going on in my life. Somehow, when I look at some of these, I go, yes, that's what I needed. Those are the answers I needed. And specifically, what is the body is the one that was appealing to me today when you had, you know, when we had discussed what we're going to talk about. And like I said, I thought the synchronicity of turning on 1-2 Radio this morning and literally hearing Ken talking about what is the body. I mean, my timing was like impeccable. You know,
impeccable.
I can't believe I turn it on exactly when he goes, okay, what is the body? It was like just meant right for me. So I was pretty pleased.
Well, it's a perennial topic, isn't it? I mean, because it's basically what most of us spend most of our lives in one way or another obsessing over in different ways.
Yes.
And it's just kind of fascinating to watch. Watch our minds, you know, jockeying for position to do things with or not do things with the body, you know, to try to, you know, maximize pleasure, avoid pain, to try to make things in the world the way we want them to be. And I think a lot of Course in Miracles is really addressed to not in any kind of derogatory way or a mean-spirited way, but just to have us look at our thoughts about the body and see how, you know, obsessive compulsive we are about doing things for its comfort and its well-being and all the things that we think are going to make us happy as a result of optimizing, you know, the care and feeding of these machines that we call our bodies.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Well, and in this particular lesson, there are some lines that I just think are particularly, or at least they jump out at me at this time. Mm-hmm. But one of the ideas that really jumps out too is that, you know, as we go along with A Course in Miracles, that this is all an illusion. This is all the illusion that we have created. This is our dream. But we can't escape the body. We can't, you know, we don't want to go to one of those extremes and say the body is absolutely nothing. It, you know, as Ken says, you know, Jesus even says occasionally, it's just nothing but dust. I mean, you know, that's not going to get us anywhere pretending that we're not in a body, because that's almost, you know, whether we go to either extreme, honoring the body, worshiping the body, or totally ignoring the body, it's the same thing because it's making the body real. Mm-hmm. And so in this particular lesson, once again, he brings us back to what is the purpose.
Exactly.
It's not the thing itself, but it's what purpose do you give it?
The why, and it's like, the intent, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, so once again, sometimes in A Course in Miracles, there are so many things that I read them, and I literally go, oh, you know, I feel my shoulders relax. I feel like this big sigh of energy. And that's one of them. It goes right back to, this isn't about, like I say, worshiping the body, making the body nothing. It's about what is the purpose that you give to the body. Exactly. You know, what is your intent? What is your purpose? It always comes back to that, whether or not, you know, it's something material. Because, I mean, by extension, I think we could talk about anything material in our lives. You know, why is this so special to me? What is its purpose? You know, it doesn't mean that we can't have nice clothes or we can't have nice stuff. But what is the purpose? So anyway, I'm kind of stuck. I'm a broken record right there.
I think it's a good place to be stuck if you had to be stuck on a plate, because the purpose really is everything. I mean, that determines our complete experience. And I think a companion thought to the fact that the purpose is so important is that there's really only two purposes, because there's really only two thought systems. And that's another one of the gemstone brilliant ideas in A Course in Miracles that makes it simultaneously so simple and also so challenging, because we have such enormous resistance to that, thinking that, you know, because we want to complicate things. We came to this world to complicate things, which, you know, is again sort of a controversial idea. But
right.
But we thought that somehow we could do better than perfect oneness, you know, without getting too far afield on that idea. But you know, essentially what we need to do, though, is rather than dwell on that, is just look at where we're at right now and see that at every moment we have the choice of one of two thought systems to apply to everything that appears to be happening to our bodies, and see that it can have either the purpose of aligning us with spirit or aligning us with form. We can be aligning ourselves with loving kindness, or we can be aligning ourselves with fear. And one of the, you know, another really fairly radical idea, but radical in a great way, in A Course in Miracles, is that there's really only those two emotions, love and fear. And in fact, it even says what's not love is murder.
Yeah.
and the body basically left to the ego's own devices, if we will, because Of Course Miracle suggests that the body is merely a puppet or a machine or a vehicle that responds to the intention, which kind of ties into that we give it, which kind of ties into the modern physics notion of, you know, that mind is primary. It's no longer something that can be factored out of quantum mechanics. And that was one of the things that blew away the folks in Copenhagen when the contemporaries of Einstein, Planck, Bohr, Heisenberg, all those folks were gathered there, and talking about this crazy new thing called quantum physics. And, you know, that's what we call it now anyway, but they were one of the things that started this revolution in physics, which basically is directly responsible for the technology of some of the things we're using right now in order to have this conversation, for example. This whole semiconductor industry is based on quantum mechanics. But one of the fundamental ideas that's not usually considered is that the wave-particle duality is really one of the conundrums that essentially forced physics to consider the idea that mind is primary, because the form certainly is measurable, but as soon as you have the intention to measure the form in different ways, it responds according to your purpose, your intention,
right,
the why.
Right.
And that why, in the realm of this wave-particle duality, that's basically one example of that. But I think the more important application that is the metaphysical application we can apply 24/7, 365 is which teacher, which thought system? Am I listening to the teacher of love, or am I listening to the teacher of fear? Am I listening to the inner teacher of kindness, or the inner teacher of cruelty? You know, and it's really, I mean, you can group all those thoughts together that relate to, you know, kindness and love and shared interest together, and you can really group all the things that are divisive that are meant to separate and foster the belief, and that's all it is a belief in separation, and to keep us literally in the dark, in a dream of duality. And that's again why, as you point out very appropriately, the body is not intrinsically good or bad in itself. It's the purpose we put it to. And one of the things I think is really crucial in A Course in Miracles is the idea that we use everything that seems to happen to us in our bodies and around our bodies as a vehicle for getting back to the mind, getting back to the decision-making faculty in the mind that chooses one of those two thought systems at every moment. And eventually, when we see the futility and in a very pragmatic way, that choosing the thought system of fear and loathing, just to use a familiar phrase, you know, that whole crazy thought system that has to do with separate interests and polarity and divisiveness, if we can choose consistently against that thought system, the real alternative will automatically be revealed to us, and we find that we are more and more peaceful the more we consistently apply that. And it requires tremendous patience, doesn't it, to do that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, just consistency. You know, you choose it every moment, which is another thing. I think so often we think of ourselves as, oh, I set an intention, I make a decision, and then that it's just an effect. And I don't think humans work that way. I mean, it's almost like we have to continually make that decision.
Right.
And at least in A Course in Miracles or spiritually, I think we do. Mm-hmm. Every time we get off track, or every time we kind of fall off the wagon, as they would say, you just get right back up and you make the choice again. You make the decision. You don't look back and condemn yourself or judge yourself. You simply make the choice, the decision, and you go forward.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that takes a lot of practice, doesn't it? I mean, to consistently recognize that there's no point in beating ourselves up for having chosen an insane thought system. The only sane choice is to pick yourself up and continue on, and to forgive yourself and everyone else for what they haven't done. And I think that's the key. And I think that's why it ties into how the appropriate use of our bodies is to it's not to deny the sensory data. It's not to deny what comes into our eyes and ears and our other senses and say, oh no, that's not real. Cause you know, that's not terribly helpful. But what is helpful is to ask ourselves, would I want to see the people in my world guilty? That is hugely helpful. And
yes.
If we can look at that data and how the ego mind takes this raw data that is basically neutral and then basically packages an interpretation, or really a misinterpretation, onto that, that says that, you know, someone or something is worthy of condemnation, and just kind of watch our mind and see when that starts happening and say, you know, that isn't particularly helpful. And if we can catch ourselves doing that more and more frequently and see that that's just not productive, it's just not effective at all in a very kind of, you know, dispassionate scientific way, eventually we'll say, you know, that inner kindness teacher's curriculum really does work. Because if I just choose consistently to see everyone as innocent of anything on a cosmic level, we begin to identify with that spiritual essence that we all are and have and share, instead of the pettiness and the temporal fleeting stuff that comes and goes and can never really satisfy us.
Right.
That doesn't mean we don't do the things in the world that are appropriate on the level of form. It just means that we take them a little less seriously all the time. And, and we actually have more fun as a result, because we're also more free to make choices when we're not dependent on the outcome for our peace of mind. That gives us a much wider range and scope of choices even in the world to draw from, instead of being limited to, oh, well, what's in it for me? And that's an enormous constraint.
Well, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but it's something I've been thinking about this week, and it seems like it's come up a lot. And so in some ways it does seem to fit with this. What is the body? Because like in the very first sentence here, it says the body is the fence the Son of God imagines that he has built to separate parts of his self from other parts. It is within this fence he thinks he lives, to die as it decays and crumbles, for within this fence he thinks that he is safe from love. Identifying with his safety, he regards himself as what his safety is. What else could he be certain? How else could he be certain he remains within the body, keeping love outside? And where I'm going with this is the whole idea, I think especially energetically, people in my field, we talk a lot about boundaries. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I've just been thinking, and maybe it's because of, you know, kind of what's going on in the news, et cetera. But I think about how it may be more appropriate to have boundaries that are permeable, or boundaries that are made of different things. You know, so maybe it's not so black and white that it's like, I always stand behind this boundary. You know, I always stand behind this fence, this body, that things are not nearly as black and white as we think. And maybe in certain situations or with different people. And this sounds really funny, but the image that had come to me this week as I was thinking about this is that I love to make cold brew coffee. And the way I do it is I have basically a little container that's glass, but within it, it has a metal, what you might say, container that's a sieve.
Okay.
And so you put coffee in it and then surround it with water. And of course, because it's permeable, the water goes through and you soak it for so long and then you pour off the coffee. Mm-hmm. But I had gone to Starbucks and had gotten some coffee specifically ground, and literally they just made a mistake in the grind. So when I got it home, instead of being a relatively coarse grind that would stay in the container, it was almost like dust. They had gone exactly the opposite. They had, you know, ground it so fine that as I started pouring it out, I went, oh my God, this will never work because it won't stay in the sieve. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just had to get another coarser grind, but it kind of, I thought about that, how, you know, for another purpose, that coffee would have been great.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You put that coffee in like maybe a French press, you put it someplace else, it would be perfect. But the boundaries are these hard and fast rules that we have. In some situations, they work, and in other situations, they don't work at all.
Yep.
And just that, how flexible are we with boundaries, and how often do they slip over into being defenses? You know, because that's uh-huh. what it is. Oh, I built this fence and I'm separating myself from you, and I'm separating. I mean, we never think of it as separating ourselves from love, but we certainly see it as, you know, I'm maintaining my integrity. You know, here I am. This is who I am, and this is what's going on for me. And without ever realizing that by, you know, really consistently maintaining that boundary, or a very hard boundary that becomes a defense, then all we're really doing is keeping ourselves inside and away from love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in any case, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about boundaries this week, and just about the idea that it's not so much about, establishing a boundary once and for all. This is my boundary. I don't do this, or I do do this. It's about being in the moment and being flexible and knowing that you can have different coffee grinds or different boundaries for different purposes.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm glancing over at Ken Wapnick's brilliant Journey Through the Workbook and his commentary on What is the Body, that essay in the toward the back of the workbook and that we're talking about today. And he says, one sentence I've got underlined here right in the first paragraph, the body is purposive, the capstone of the ego strategy and the final step in its plan to keep the Son of God mindless. And I think that's a big clue, is that as long as we, you know, look to the world as a reinforcement for, you know, some kind of justification for our thoughts, and we're wanting to defend something. And there's a place in the mind that needs no defense whatsoever, because there's an awareness that we, as A Course in Miracles suggests, took with us into the dream that is oftentimes very dormant, but it's always there in everyone, that is the the gateway back to the oneness that we really all share. And the way we get to that is through sameness. And the way we get to sameness is by looking at the barriers that we've made in our mind. And the barrier that is probably, you know, the most common one is the barrier of unforgiveness, the barrier of wanting to judge or condemn or otherwise, you know, make better or worse, or just essentially separate in one way or another ourselves from others, or from groups of people, or from, you know, groups of animals or plants or planets or, you know, extraterrestrials. I mean, it could be just about anything, you know, the whole gamut of things that, you know, we like and don't like. I mean, it could be as subtle as I'd never eat that flavor of ice cream or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just kind of pulling something out of it. But it's interesting to just kind of watch our judgments about things and ask ourselves, is this something, is this a preference that I can, you know, if for some reason the script in my life goes away that I don't like, with I in quotes, am I still going to be peaceful? And if the answer is no, that's usually the clue or the trigger to realize that we're making distinctions among illusions. And I think one of the ideas that has really helped me a lot is that in the non-dual metaphysics of A Course in Miracles is that every illusion is the same. And that's really the basis for the very first statement in the text. There's no order of difficulty in miracles. Well, as Bill Thetford said, there's, you know, I'm paraphrasing, I'm pretty sure, there's no order of difficulty in illusions either, which means that anything having to do with space and time and bodies is all relative to the you know, it's all put in perspective when we recognize that anything that comes and goes is essentially a dream. It's basically a drama in the mind that we've reenacted, and we're watching a movie, you know, a very elaborate holographic movie in the mind that has already been produced, directed, acted, and it's in the can, as they say in the industry, and we're just playing it through a projector. But the actual movie was over a long, long time ago. And we're just, you know, putting that back in our movie player in the mind and watching it again because we think that there's something important, and we're forgetting the fact that we're actually a spectator in the theater, having also been the writer, producer, director, choreographer, and everything else. But it's a movie, and once we recognize that it's a movie, it becomes much easier to do what we need to do, you know, as the characters on the screen, but at the same time not take it quite so seriously and have more fun with it, and certainly not to condemn any of the other things that happen to be appearing in our little local version of the movie. Right. And again, that's what's challenging, because we really want to identify. And that's why I think Ken says why it's purposive. We want to identify with the fence. We want to identify with the boundary because – and this is oftentimes where it's unconscious until we look at it carefully and consistently and usually over a long period of time. there's always these little bucket list holdouts of thinking, well, if I can just do this, or if this just came my way, or if I had this relationship or this job or this financial situation or this health situation, or, you know, the way I want it, then I'd be happy. And the body is becomes an incredibly challenging and ultimately frustrating need machine, as Ken calls it, Ken Wapnick calls it, and it's also the called the engine of destruction, and other places it's called, you know, a rotting prison. So, you know, the Course in Miracles isn't terribly complimentary, but it's basically saying that in jest, not in any kind of derogatory or mean spirited way. It's basically saying, do you really want to invest your identity in something that, you know, if you take good care of it, might last a century, and usually starts getting a little funky toward the end of that century or so? Or do you want to invest in something that you've never left, you never will leave, and that is your real identity? And that real identity is really the only place where you're going to find the peace that is unshakable. And I think that's why there's so much emphasis on the body and on relationships and in looking at the investment we have on the level of form to those things and changing the purpose of them. So, do you want to read the next? Oh, go ahead.
Well, you know, before we can read that next section, but you know what I was thinking is, here's the irony, and I guess in fact it may even be in the next paragraph. But the irony to me is that we make this body, you know, we make this dream, we make this body, and then the body inevitably lets us down.
Right.
Right. And then we use
dare you, body?
Yeah, but then we rationalize that. I mean, to me, the irony is then that's our proof that God really is out to get us. Mm-hmm. We make this imperfect dream, this imperfect body, and then go right back to assuming that God created it, God did it, and he's out to get us. Yeah. You know, he's punishing us. And so I just think it's funny that it's almost like we build a house on sand, and then when the storm takes it away, we somehow forget we built it. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And see, that's our proof that we were right in the first place. And it's like, why are we such illogical creatures?
We build a house of cards on a stormy beach, and we're not even using a full deck.
Right. I mean, why are we so illogical?
To mix metaphors there. Yeah.
Right, but that's it. And you know, I see that every single day in myself and in other people. It's like we think we're being so logical, and it's like the whole thing is, as you said, a house of cards.
Yeah. It's just really silly. You know, obviously the appropriate thing to do is to, you know, take care of your body. And if you, you know, in a family or whatever, you know, whatever kind of, you know, workplace, community, you know, whatever social context you find yourself in, you know, do your thing and, you know, I brush my teeth 2 or 3 times a day, you know, and why not? I mean, just it's silly not to, right?
Right.
I mean, it just kind of do all the normal things, but the idea is to not make a big deal about all the things in the sense that if we can just watch ourselves getting invested in the outcome of things happening a certain way or not happening a certain way, then we begin to take the body less seriously, and our identification really becomes more not with the separate self, but with the shared self, and with the not with the physical relationships, but with the relationships in the mind that we have with everyone. And we can have in something I was reading in the course just in the last day or two, you know, there's no difference really in truth between a relationship between my mind and the mind of a person that I think is still alive that may not be in front of me physically, or someone who may have passed on, as we would think of it, because those are all mental concepts, which also means that my body and the persona that I, you know, ascribe and associate somewhat to, you know, tightly to this particular body, that's also a made up concept. But that's one of the most challenging ideas in this metaphysical system is that all form really is just thought projected out. And if we can kind of wrap our heads around that using a biological metaphor there, start to realize that, and it's a slow process, that we really are mental creatures, that gives us an enormous amount of freedom, and more true freedom and true peace, the more we disidentify with what is, the rotting prison, if you will, or the need machine, but instead identify with a purpose that is all about communicating the shared interest of let's all go home together from the dream of separation to a happier dream, which is also, again, just a transitional phase to the perfect oneness, but we can't really grok that. But we do that by shared interest, by seeing how can I make the life of people that I'm living with or working with, you know, a happier place, and let them feel more appreciated and cared for, and all those kind of things that really don't cost us anything, but are a reflection of the decision in the mind to not make another person guilty and to see the innocence behind the form. And that includes characters that parade themselves across the TV screens and laptops and phones in our mind.
Yeah.
Because, it used to be newspapers and books, but, things are changing from treeware. Slowly but surely. But anyway, it's all about, just looking at the contents of the mind, isn't it? And seeing that the fences that we built in our mind are arbitrary and permeable, like you say. I mean, another thing that that modern physics, I think, has given us a great lesson on is the fact that there's mostly empty space between the atoms.
Right.
When I was in high school, my physics and chemistry teacher said, well, I was living in Livermore, California, where I grew up at the time. There's the Lawrence Livermore Labs, which we used to call East Avenue Hardware, down the road about 4 miles away, where my dad used to work. And, basically a big physics nuclear research facility. And so I used to joke that I grew up in a nuclear family, literally and figuratively. But anyway, my high school teacher was saying, if you took the nucleus of an atom here in this classroom and made it about the size of a soccer ball or basketball, the nearest electron would be about 4 miles away, which is where the lab was. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of empty space.
Right.
And that's why a neighbor of ours when I was growing up, a fellow named Nick, who was basically sort of doing cosmic particle x-rays of the second pyramid at Giza to find out if there were hidden chambers, which was kind of fascinating to me and still somewhat is, that he basically was saying, well, depending on the frequency of the cosmic energy particles that are above the visible and ultraviolet and x-ray and all those spectra, it's even higher frequencies than those. The higher frequency you go, octave by octave by octave, the more quickly they can pass through because of the greater energy through matter. And so they were measuring frequencies way above x-rays that could go all the way through the solid limestone and granite blocks of this 700 foot tall pyramid and go all the way to the chamber underneath that structure. And they were using essentially counters that detected those cosmic particles, and they would tilt them around in different angles and triangulate to figure out where these hidden passages might be. Well, they didn't find any, but they did find interesting glow around the what's called the Great Pyramid next by tilting the whole apparatus sideways at the end. And that was kind of interesting, but that's an aside. But anyway, to me, the important thing was that there's nothing there. I mean, there's basically, we think matter is really solid, but in our bodies are made of that same stuff, allegedly. But it's mostly nothing, a whole lot of nothing going on. There's right. there's a bumper sticker that a friend shared with me recently that they saw and they really liked. It's, never trust an atom, they make everything up. I thought that was pretty cute.
So
atoms are mostly empty space. But they're all interconnected. They're all part of the same oneness. And that's why you can take two electrons in an electron pair and separate them either, a foot apart or galaxies apart. And they've done this in the lab, thousands of miles apart. And you take, well, at least I don't know how far they've done it, but anyways, it's enough to where they've proven mathematically and with physics on it, and that you can take two electrons in the same pair and you change the axis of the spin of the electron, the other one in that pair will change instantaneously, at not the speed of light or 100 times the speed of light, but instantaneously.
Oh, wow.
Which means that there's something going on there that either they're communicating really fast, like instantaneously, or, bingo, what if there is no separation? And that it's only our misunderstanding, our misinterpretation that shows a world of form and space where they appear to be separate, where there appears to be a fence, if you will, or a border, or some kind of a wall that we think of as space that seems to separate seemingly individual things. What if it's just one thing? And that's where a lot of modern physics, when you read some of the more metaphysical extrapolations of that, is going. And some of the pioneers in that area, like John Wheeler, said there's no out there.
Right.
I think a great reminder that, you know, because we think of our bodies as these physical things, and we think they're solid and they're real and they're disconnected and they have their own, you know, their own purpose that's separate from everybody else. But modern physics basically says, you know, your whole foundation for believing in separation is unfounded. I mean, an electron surrounding an atom, you know, we used to went to school, it was like these little elliptical, you know, spherical, elliptical, whatever, kind of orbital kind of things, you know, and they had these different shapes and things. But then modern physics came along and said, well, it's really just like a probability cloud. And that what's really going on is there's at any given time, that electron could be anywhere. But statistically, it's going to be closer to the nucleus of the atom. And again, my limited understanding of modern physics is just that. So please take all this with a grain of salt. But I think I'm, you know, somewhat speaking from, you know, what has been discovered in the last few decades.
Right.
But the idea being is that, you know, an electron that I think is in the tip of my finger could be you know, at one instant, orbiting Mars. You
right.
know, for a instantaneous. Or it could be in the Andromeda galaxy. I mean, but statistically, that's the probability is probably astronomically low, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. So, I mean, those are things that make the Star Trek teleportation and all those kind of things seem suddenly, oh, well, yeah, now I can see where that might happen.
Yeah.
but what if, again, what if, you know, we have all these aha moments and we think, wow, isn't that magical? You know, we watch, you know, Star Trek and all that kind of stuff and see those things happening. And yet, you know, we are talking through technology that would have been unimaginable a century ago. And yet we take it for granted. So why wouldn't the idea that the body and the entire, you know, extrapolating that to the entire material universe really is just a conception that we've had this consensual belief in that we don't even challenge.
Right.
And I think A Course in Miracles goes along with that very nicely and asks us not to get, you know, upset about it and to do it at our own pace, but to really challenge these really fundamental assumptions about the nature of reality. And more importantly, as Ken Wapnick brilliantly says, not only the nature of it, but the purpose of it. And if the purpose of it is really to keep us away from a feeling of peace, then that's pretty crazy. And once we start seeing that, it's like, why would I want to continue going there in my mind?
Right, exactly. And in fact, on that note, I'm going to read, I think it's paragraph 3 of this.
Okay.
It says, the body is a dream. Like other dreams, it sometimes seems to picture happiness, but can quite suddenly revert to fear where every dream is born. For only love creates in truth, and truth can never fear. Made to be fearful, must the body serve the purpose given it? But we can change the purpose that the body will obey by changing what we think it is for.
Exactly.
And then you want to read the next paragraph?
Sure. The body is the means by which God's Son returns to sanity. Well, there's a giving it a different purpose right there. Right?
Yeah, really.
Not the usual purpose that we give it out of the box, but we can reprogram it, you know, like a Star Trek episode that was one of my favorites, the Kobayashi Maru, where Kirk outsmarted the Starfleet Academy unsolvable problem by reprogramming it and essentially changing the jurisdiction, you know, to say, hey, I'm not playing by these rules. And that's what A Course in Miracles is basically saying, is you don't have to play by the ego's rules. So I'll start that paragraph.
Right. Right.
The body is the means by which God's Son returns to sanity. We can change. We don't have to play by ego's rules. Though it was made to fence him into hell without escape, yet has the goal of heaven been exchanged for the pursuit of hell. So basically we're just saying, hey, I'm going to give up on, you know, going for being miserable. I'm going to
yeah.
I could see peace instead of this. And I'm not upset for the reason I think. The Son of God extends his hand to reach his brother and to help him walk along the road with him. Now is the body holy. Now it serves to heal the mind that it was made to kill. What a different purpose. I mean, that last sentence really tells it all, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and read the last one just because it's this paragraph, I think, ends with such an incredible statement. You will identify with what you think will make you safe. Whatever it may be, you will believe that is one with you. Your safety lies in truth and not in lies. Love is your safety. Fear does not exist. Identify with love and you are safe. Identify with love and you are home. Identify with love and find yourself. And I just love those lines, those last few sentences, because, you know, even as an astrologer, I tell people that so many times, because in astrology, the second house of the chart represents what we value, what we think is safety, what we think is security, what we're looking for. And of course, it's so much fun because most people think, oh, that's home, that's relationships, that's stuff. And yet, based on the sign that's on that second house, I can just pinpoint what is it you identify with because you think that is safety. You think that is security. And, you know, like a person that has Aquarius there, they want freedom, you know? So they may be looking for something completely different than a person who has Taurus there or a person who has Cancer. And so, you know, once again, we are the decision makers. It's the purpose that we give to things. Identify with love and we are safe. Identify with love and we are home. Identify with love and we find ourselves. Mm-hmm. What are we identifying with? You know, what is it? What is the purpose or what are we thinking has value in our lives?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, Miracles just asks us, from so many different angles and so many different ways over and over and over again, to just look at the contents of our mind. And it comes at it from all these different approaches so that we, you know, have opportunities to see, especially if we, you know, study this over a number of years or decades, that it really is the same question being asked moment to moment is, you know, do I want to see peace or do I want to see what I chose to value and to identify with my safety as something that could come and go. And certainly anything that is a body or that is there to, is a support system for the body, you know, we're just talking shelf lives here.
Right. And you know, you said it in the very beginning, actually, of this conversation. You know, it's like when we put all of our eggs in a basket that has to do with a body, that has to do with a material thing, that has to do with something that can go away, something that can change, we're never going to feel okay. We're never going to feel safe. Exactly. But when we can switch our identity to that spiritual being, to that person, that part of ourselves that never dies, that part of ourself that is eternal, when we can actively every day or in you know, at the on the spur of the moment, change that identity and say, I'm a spiritual being having a physical experience, then we don't care as much about the thing. You know, we don't get exactly what we want in this moment. You know, we think we wanted this. This thing is going to make us happy. This person is going to make us happy. This relationship or getting a particular outcome, that's what's going to make us happy. But when we have trust and faith, I am a spiritual being. I'm a decision maker and I'm never going to abandon myself. You know, I'm never going to abandon myself. God is never going to abandon me. When we kind of fall back into that identity, then all of a sudden the particular outcome isn't really as important because we know we can continue to create another outcome that we're going to like.
Yes, exactly. And it's also, I think, kind of the spirit of in appreciating whatever seems to be happening and recognizing that everyone really is the perfect messenger, and everything is really the perfect messenger to get us back to the mind and its decision point in the mind, where we can choose either to be at peace or to fight against it. And I'm reminded, as you were talking a moment ago, of kind of the cliche of you know, kids opening presents at Christmas, you know, or the holidays, and you know, usually if it's the toy or the whatever isn't broken within the first few minutes or the first few days, even with or without that happening, there's often greater fascination with the box that it came in many cases. But it's kind of, you know, because we realize, you know, I think if we can take that insight and generalize and realize this, it's not about the thing. It's about the intention. And that's what we really want. I mean, that's the real need. And if we think the intention is outside of us, if someone has to do something for us or give something to us or whatever, and our happiness or our peace of mind is contingent on that, then, you know, we're going to be forever at the mercy of, and therefore not very merciful to ourselves or anyone else. Whereas if our peace of mind is completely independent of what happens or doesn't happen in the world, or our bodies in particular, then we can afford to be merciful instead of at the mercy of, because once we're independent of what happens or doesn't happen, more and more, we have greater latitude to truly be gracefully merciful to everyone that our path crosses. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that, of course, that takes practice again.
Yep. Absolutely.
And just mindfully looking at you know, the purpose that we've given the body and making it special. You know, I'm just glancing again over at Ken's commentary. He says, moreover, bodies were made not to join. The joining we believe occurs only in the fulfillment of our thoughts of specialness. And of course, you know, the fulfilling thoughts of specialness is like, well, let's make it about me. And then that's always this empty thing. That's always basically, you know, it's like, you know, you've given up on the toy, you've given up on the box, and it's okay, now what?
Right.
but oftentimes we just go to the next toy, even though, you know, as adults, we think, oh, well, I'm more mature than that. But in a sense, we kind of do.
Yeah.
If we don't look at our obsession with trying to make the world be a certain way. And again, there's nothing wrong with, you know, making your house nice and you know, helping in your community and with your family and your coworkers and taking care of your bodies and doing all those things. There's nothing wrong at all with that. It's just the investment in the outcome that is such a tricky, slippery slope kind of thing. To just sit, watch it and begin to laugh gently, inwardly, more and more frequently when we catch ourselves going down that road of thinking, oh, well, if this happens, then I'll be happy, or if this doesn't happen, then I won't, kind of thing. So,
right. And that's it. Only one outcome is going to make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've decided ahead of time what that outcome is going to be. Yeah. And if that doesn't happen, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah. And that's the whole principle of specialness, is saying, I'm going to take this one body out of all the, you know, just on this planet alone, there's, you know, 7+ billion others that are just as important. But we've narrowed our focus down, and like a little squinty-eyed focus down to this one little body, and made it the big deal at the exclusion of almost everybody else. Occasionally we, you know, let, you know, another person or two, or maybe even a good handful into our realm of well, I think I could care for them too. But the ego is an incredibly selfish bastard, basically.
Yes.
And to just watch that and not condemn, but just say, wow, that part of my mind is nutso. Why would I want to continue to be frustrated by something that I know ultimately is never going to work? We may have momentary victories or, you know, success things. You might, you know, get something in the mail or things might turn the way you want them to turn now and then. And then what happens when they don't? You know, it's like, am I going to be losing my peace over this?
Yes.
If my body is no longer in the health it had when I was in my 30s and 20s and teens, am I going to say, oh, well, gee, now I have justification for being a miserable, you know, wretch that complains. And I mean, again, you know, it's not saying don't do the things that you can to make your body happy and healthy. But when things start to wear out, if we can just remember to say, okay, inwardly, this is a vehicle that has a finite purpose. But given over to Holy Spirit, it can have a perfect purpose for forgiving myself for believing that I was limited to this and that everyone else seems to be limited to their specific bodies too. But that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That just ain't true.
Yeah. And to kind of wrap on this, you know, it's just that idea. I think I heard Ken say this morning, or at least I had come across it this week. And that is just that idea, together or not at all.
Exactly.
You know, remains one of my first insights reading A Course in Miracles is that, you know, they don't seat your party until everybody's there.
Yeah.
You know, and so together or not at all, you know, this whenever we believe we can do it separately, whenever we believe somehow we're going to get into the restaurant first, it's like, nope, they don't see this until we're all there. So together or not at all.
Exactly. And kind of, I guess sort of, I'm not sure if it's a corollary, but a companion thought to that is if we choose the thought system of kindness, it doesn't matter whether anyone else does or not in our perception at that moment.
Right.
Because we're choosing really for everyone, and the appearance of, quote, someone else, unquote, not making that choice really is just part of what we're healing. We're healing the belief that anything less than perfect love and perfect kindness and perfect oneness is possible. And by holding the thought that there's really only, you know, two expressions. There's either an expression of love or a call for it, you know, and when we see something fearful, essentially, and there's a wide range of expressions of fear. But if everything that seems to be in that category is just a call for love, then we can afford to be infinitely patient. Well, over time anyway, mm-hmm. as we gradually, you know, notice that the things that used to bug us are now just like, oh, well, there's a call for love. And that becomes my call for love, because my individuality is really the classroom in which I learned that the only real identity that is going to make me happy is the going beyond the duality in the individuality and seeing that my self, capital S, is the same as yourself and it's the same as everyone else's self. And that's where we, you know, all join the table together. But we and seemingly can, you know, choose in our minds the thought system of kindness, regardless of what on the level of form anyone else seems to be doing at any given time.
Right? That's right. Well, and Bruce, we have 2 minutes to wrap up the show.
Okay.
So I, as usual, I'm going to go over to the chat room and I'm going to put your blog, which is www.acim.blog, right?
acimblog.com.
Yep. And any announcements you want to make?
Just a quick one. The Miracle Share Conference that was scheduled for October has been rescheduled for January, and we're still working on that. But basically, all the people putting it together was like, wait a minute, we're running out of time here, and we've all been so busy. So it's going to be even better, and it's all the same characters and so forth so far are planned, but it'll be in January instead of October, and we'll have more details on that as they're available. So,
well, great, thank you. And you often put that right on your blog, right?
I do, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And also on the ACIM blog Facebook page too. So,
and I'm also posting www.facim.org, which is the foundation for A Course in Miracles, which of course is just, you know, whenever we keep referring to Ken Wapnick, almost everything he's ever written or recorded. Yes. I mean, it's all over there. Not to mention, you know, you could spend hours over there just reading some of the FAQs and some of the great information over there. So, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. One quick one is the acim.org website also has a great wealth of information, and we'll be having more too. So
that's right. So that's acim.org.
That's the Foundation for Inner Peace website. Uh-huh. The
companion
site.
Okay. Great.
Thank you again, CA, and everyone.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody, thanks for being with me today, the listeners and everybody in the chat room. I really appreciate that. And thanks, Christy Brower, for being our producer today. And I hope that you will kind of stick with us, because we've got more live programming coming up here on 1-2 Radio. And also, we've got a lot of sales going on this weekend over on 1-2 Listen, and I'm going to try to put as many hours as I can into that. So you will find me this weekend over there, and probably this afternoon as well. And you can always, you know, write me and say, hey, CA, I want to connect with you. So you can always do that through the 1-2-listen.com site. So everybody, thank you so much for being here. And I am going to close this out. You have been listening to what we call the Friday Morning Show with CA Brooks and my guest Bruce Rawls here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you think about the body.